Welcome, folks, to another of the Belfast Men's Health Group podcasts with Denise Watson from U105. Denise, thanks very much for taking part in our wee podcast.
No problem.
It's great to have you here. And I suppose we'll get stuck straight in to, I guess most people will know Denise Watson from TV and radio. Tell us a wee bit how you broke into the media.
Well, Paul, I was a very focused child. You know when you get that question at school, what do you want to do when you grow up? And most people don't really know what they want to do. I was 100% focused. I was absolutely obsessed with radio. I loved Radio 1 and all those DJs in the 80s, like, Gary Davis, Jackie Brambles, Bruno Brooks, Simon. Oh, I just loved all of them, and I listened and did that old tape in the top 40 on a Sunday and pretended to be a DJ. So that was at the age of like 10 or 11. And it was, it was like a burning desire, burning ambition that I wanted to do. And I kept doing things like that. And then it got to like when I was 16. I'm trying to think now. Yes, I was 16 and there was careers advice at school. Mm-hmm. I went to school, a really good school called Wallace High School down in Lisburn. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of very, very talented academic people, you know, going on and be teachers and lawyers and doctors. And then there was me, and I said, I want to be a DJ. And I remember the careers advisor just going, now don't be silly, because girls can't do that. And that's what it was thought of around about that time. And that would have been maybe late 80s, as late as that. And I said, but why? Because I'd heard Jackie Brambles or Liz Kershaw or Annie Nightingale, and I'm wondering why a girl couldn't do it. It didn't deter me. I went on and I started rapping doors, sending letters to the likes of lovely John Rossborough, but at that time was Downtown Radio, Cool FM. Mm-hmm. I sent letters to the BBC. I got very polite letters back saying, you know, go get your education and whatever. And I did. I got my A-levels, and then I went on to Queen's to study English, because I knew that if I could study journalism or English in some way, then that would tie in almost a media career. And I kept doing, you know, like hospital radio, started hospital radio around by that time in the city hospital, which is a volunteers, and you got to meet patients and they ask them what they would like to play, and the majority of people wanted Daniel O'Donnell played, whereas I was wanting Bon Jovi played, you know. So went from that was 18-19, still really focused, even though I'd been turned down, there's no job. And then got into like volunteer radio. At that time, it was called Belfast Community Radio, which you would know better as Q Radio or City Beat now. Mm-hmm. And at that Belfast Community Radio, I met a lot of very well-known people you would know now, like Stephen Nolan and Tracy McGee and John O'Rourke, lots of people you sort of become household names, but they all were like me. They were sacrificing their social lives and their time on their own to volunteer with the hope of getting a chance to do radio because they want to do it. And then on from there, I was Mike Gaston at the time was running Belfast Community Radio, and then we phased it into City Beat, changed management, and then from City Beat doing some weekend show late nights. But I was also doing my degree at the same time, and then sport was a very big part of my life as well. So I was playing basketball and training, and my mum used to look at me and just go, are you Queensley basketball or radio or English, what are you doing? But I never ever give up, Paul, you know. And there's a lot to be said for, you know, there was this time I thought, I don't want to look too ambitious and I don't want to seem too pushy or anything, but at the same time, you know, what's wrong with that? What's the worst can happen? Somebody will say no to you. So I would say to any teenage boys or girls, listen, you know what, if it's your dream, no matter how silly it may be, you might be a Formula One driver, you want to be a pilot on a massive jet or something, there's no reason why you can't aim high, you know, because the worst thing will happen is somebody will go no, and then you'll find a way around it. So that's where I sort of get in.
And just listening to you there and your age, I believe there's a milestone. Are you happy to disclose what age you are? I think you've probably given it away a wee bit there, just simply because, you know,
You're asking a lady your age. I'm joking. Yeah, it was a milestone, and I'll tell you about this. I turned 50 in October last year. Wow. In 2021. Yeah, and I don't feel 50, but I also felt that there was an element of sort of like middle age that's creeping into some of the things. I wasn't as tight on my diet, I wasn't as tight on my exercise and my well-being more. It's mm-hmm. not just about weight, it's about well-being and feeling good. And I would say in about 2020, and we'd gone to obviously the pandemic, and we're eating all around us, and we weren't going out, and we'll have another chocolate, we'll have another bun, or I'll have another glass of wine. And about midway through 2020, I thought, I'm not actually happy. I've put on a wee bit of weight. I'm not feeling great. I know I could be better. So I started really probably looking towards my 50th birthday and thinking, I want to be better, look better, feel better. Mm-hmm. And sort of overhauled a lot of things, started to really look at recipes and cooking from scratch with good, fresh food and fresh, mm-hmm. fresh ingredients, and cut down a bit in the wine, because it's very easy to, you know, when you're cooking, to have another glass of wine. Mm-hmm. And really, and not just buy the cheap wines, but if I did drink wine, buy a nice wine and have it, you know, with a meal. And really up on the exercise, a member of Gym Co there in Finnegy, very good gym, and I joined that. And then my dog, obviously we got a dog before lockdown, started actively saying I want to walk 3 miles a day with him, and I want to just feel better. And there's so much there's truth in what you put into your body, you know, like it shows. Mm-hmm. Drinking more water and stretching, things that I wouldn't have ever done before. But you know, when you're turning 50, you have to look after your joints as well, and just look after yourself. And then actually a big thing for me, which I'm completely obsessed with being a breakfast DJ, is sleep. Because mm-hmm. I don't get enough sleep, and I know I don't get enough sleep because of the way I work. And I am naturally a night owl, because I did late night radio for years and years before I do the radio I do now. But I have to get up at 5:30 in the morning, so I'm going to have to look at my sleep. And I hate that whole, you must get 8 hours, and mm-hmm. you know, and people monitoring their sleep on their watches. No, I don't do that, because I know that will make me frustrated. Mm-hmm. What I do is I get through the day, my show, as I've come off air now, I'm talking to you, I've just finished coming off air just after 9 there, worked mm-hmm. from 6 to 9. I get a lot of sort of admin and things I need to use my brain done with done in the morning time, and then my time is, I keep it as my time to have my sleep or my rest or my nap, or just not meditation, but sort of just relax between mm-hmm. about 1:30 and 3. That's before the school runs start. My two daughters need picked up from school. Mm-hmm. So I have that time, and I started to just have that me time, because I wasn't doing that before. And it's really, really important to just, you know, you could be a parent, and we all know what it's like, parent or an auntie, uncle, granny, granddad, mum, dad, rushing about after kids. I've got to do this, I've got to do this, and thinking, oh, must tidy the house, I have to do this, and I've got to do the shopping. And then I just went, no, I need this time from 1:30 to 3 to just kind of like recharge and look after myself, instead of rushing through the day and then feeling like completely sort of hungover by about 7 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. Even though I wasn't hungover, but you had that sort of jaded feeling. Mm-hmm. So it's so important to just take that time. And even if you do nothing more than flick through a magazine or look at the ceiling, but just have that time to go, okay, this is my time to just rest my body. I'm not 20, I'm 50. I've got to really take time to do things. So mm-hmm. that's what I've learned.
Yeah, and I mean, probably what you've, during lockdown, how did you find lockdown? You've talked a lot about, I guess, some of the things that you could have done during lockdown, but how did you find lockdown?
Yeah, difficult? Lockdown was, yeah, it was, do you know what? I loved it. Oh. And I'll tell you why. Well, not because of it, because obviously I work with Morris, and it's lovely to see Morris every morning in the studio, because he's good fun, good crack. Mm-hmm. I then was working remotely from my front lounge. A lot of people don't know this, because Morris and I have such a good rapport with each other, having known each other nearly 30 years, that mm-hmm. we can, you know, it sort of like bounce off one another. But not seeing his face, not seeing, you know, looking at him and reacting like that, we had to adjust to mm-hmm. me working from my front room with a microphone set up via an iPad and a little app called Lucy Live. I know it sounds funny, but Lucy Live is the way that I could link to studio, and then you could hear us both talk. And the listeners, we've great listeners at U105. The listeners didn't know at times that we didn't see each other, but I was talking literally like I am talking to you now down a phone without seeing him. So we had to not, jump over each other, talk over each other, and it really did work. And I did not think I would be doing that for 14 months, which I ended up doing it from March 2020 right through to like April 2021, May 2021. Mm-hmm. And I didn't for a minute think, I guess I didn't think the pandemic was going to be as scary or as unknown. As we all went into this thinking, oh, maybe over in a month or two, oh yeah, we'll look towards the rest of the year, we'll look toward, and it wasn't. And that was difficult, when people were thought that we'd get back to work. And then in terms of me, the bad thing about the pandemic was obviously I do a lot of event hosting and maybe conference hosting, MCing, and all of those things went. So as a self-employed person, I lost a third of my income. So that was the bad thing that happened to me. But I looked at it and went, I am not as badly off as some people. I am not those key workers who went out and put themselves on the line, in shops and buses, and they're the people I look up to. And I thought I could have had a job like that and had to do that, or like a member of my family who had her own business, which was all tied into bars and basically hospitality, and that entire business and she really, I was so proud of her because she focused then on, doing her house out, a bit of painting, and really keeping herself active and not thinking too much about it. Because we were in this situation, we still are in it, and nobody has ever gone through it before. But when I say I loved it, what it meant was, I suppose working from home and then having my jammies on instead of dressing up and driving down to Cassidy Keys. But so I was in the house and my girls, I have a 17-year-old called Samantha, and I have a 13-year-old Elizabeth, Beth, and they were both off school. My husband's a research fellow from Queens, so he obviously had to come out of Queens. He was one of the first to set up sort of his studio here, or his study really in our back room. So we changed that into his working area, and that's where I'm calling you from right now. He had all his work to do via Zoom, via interviews, everything. This was his room. The front room was my room, where I did my radio near the router for the internet, because obviously I needed a good internet connection to link the studio. My eldest daughter in her bedroom was doing her Google Classroom and Seesaw, all the stuff there. And my youngest daughter, then she had the lounge when I finished the show. So we all four of us were working in the house, along with a huge big short-haired pointer dog, which Eddie, which is our latest addition to the family. And we just made it work. And then I'm a real stickler for sort of meal times, and everybody sitting down at the table. So when we did it for, a break in the morning, then we had all had our lunch at 1 o'clock, we had our dinner at 5:30, 6:30, and that's how it worked. And we were in our own kind of wee bubble here. The really sad thing was obviously our in-laws and parents being in their 70s and 80s. We had to protect them so much because there are a couple of health issues there with my mum and my father-in-law, and we had to look after them and make sure nobody was going near them, and we were picking up food and anything they needed. So and they did stay in actually their houses, so that was a sad thing, not seeing them. But we were in contact every day, and we were able to FaceTime, and eventually when I was able to walk the dog around to their house and stand outside their house at a distance, that was just part of lockdown for us. But I look at it and I think, it was a time which brought a lot of people together. We got to know our neighbors even better when the clapping at night, outside and the doors. And we got to sort of know our neighbours better and realise we're all in it together. And I do think that sense of community was really, really good for people's mental well-being as well. And the fact that some people lived alone, they weren't forgotten. There was a lot of community groups in this area, or church groups, rapping on doors of older people, checking they're okay. And I think that was the good thing about lockdown. It brought a focus on what's important, and that is, health and family and looking out for people in the community. And the bad thing was we all lost money in some way, because of our lack of work. But as I say, I'm blessed. I wasn't as badly off as some people. I was still able to do my radio show, and sure, the money just goes to the taxman anyway. So
that's it. No, there was some good that came out of COVID. Yep, new ways of working, and as you said, there was certainly a sense of community. within our communities, which is great. And I'm going to pick up on a wee thing there about your dog, Eddie. I think, am I right? Is he a bit of a social media star now?
Eddie is a social media influencer, and this is absolutely hilarious because so many people then start asking me about Eddie, and then I guess I forget now that I'm radio. I do some TV, but now that I'm mainly radio, that people, you know, when I'm chatting away about Eddie in the morning, it's just natural, and I've told some stories on air, and I have people stop in the car and whispering and going, "Oh, there's Eddie. We heard you talking about him this morning." So Eddie's become a bit of a legend, yeah. And then I put a lot of photos up on some of my social media sites. And everybody's like, "Oh, Eddie, was it, what breed is he?" And they want to hear about Eddie. So then next thing was a big, I can't say, I'll not, it's a commercial company, it's a big company that does a lot of dog foods, put it that way. Wow. They just they sent me this letter saying, "Hi Denise, we would love your dog to be an influencer." we think he's perfect, you know, because he's full of fun, he's young, he's, you know, he's always running about, he's quite cute, and yeah, so he got this big box of treats and all the food and new leads and blankets, everything. So we were joking in this house that he's the most well-known member of this house.
Absolute cracker. That's a great one. And then, you know, if we're going to talk about it, I cannot leave out your daughters. You have two daughters. Now, you are quite sporty, playing basketball and what have you. Are your daughters sporty?
Now they were. They've changed. The eldest one has transitioned into musical theatre, which you do need a lot of stamina and coordination to do. Mm-hmm. They both actually go to the Northern Ireland School of Music and Theatre. That's NISMAT, that's based in Finnicky, and Louise has great kids there. And it's been lovely because obviously they were able to keep doing it during lockdown via Zoom, and they brought in dance teachers and everything. So Samantha, my eldest, she's really into musical theatre, and she's just completed a play there, a chorus line, and lots of dancing, lots of coordination, and she keeps herself fit. She's also a member of a gym as well, down in Lisburn, Pure Gym. And then Beth, she is being into hockey. She plays for South Antrim, which is based in Lisburn, and she obviously through school has been doing badminton and hockey as well. We love the idea of team sports. So both my husband and I, my husband's a volleyball player and I was a basketball player, and we both love that idea of being in a team, people having your back, and you know, and working as a team. And it's such a good grounding and sort of like working together and bonding with people. But yet both my daughters actually they're members of the Rackets Club, and we'd originally thought we'd go down there, play some badminton and tennis, because I'm obsessed by tennis, I just love tennis. But that wasn't the sport they went for. They were actually influenced by a coach, a man called Kieran down in the Rackets Club in Lisburn, and they said, "Mummy, we want to try squash." So that was an unusual sport to choose, you know, not many people, and it needed a lot of stamina and to be very fit to play it. But it just shows you the, you know, the guiding of like a really good coach, on how a good coach with a good personality and charisma can really, you know, influence children. So it's a mixed club, it's mixed boys, girls, and I say cross community, religion, race, everything. So they met a great group of kids down there, and Beth actually, and a couple of years ago, would have been sort of like, in terms of like Ireland, would have been in sort of like fifth or sixth for her age group. But we traveled all over, pardon me, Ireland for a couple of years there, you know, right down to Cork and Dublin and everything. And then when lockdown happened, it obviously shut the indoor courts, and you couldn't really practice. And then she just decided she would rather play the team sport, like hockey. Pardon me, I'm going to cough. Sorry, Paul. So we met some really good kids, you know, from Dublin. She met a lot of friends at, around Dublin. Sutton would have been the area for a very good area for squash for boys and girls. So, she played inter-pros for a couple of years. Samantha played inter-pros when she was about 15 in a team with a girl called Amy Hunter, who's now gone on to be the, you know, the record-breaking cricket, Ireland cricket star. So it's just, it was wonderful to be with parents as well who, you know, knew what it was like to sort of sacrifice, obviously, our time to make sure the kids were doing well. So Yeah, so squash, like, I would love for them maybe to go back at some point, but I think now they've chosen a different path. And you know, it's all about, like, you know, you want your kids to be active, but they have to do something they care about.
Yeah. Ach, no, you have
Whether
to,
that's,
yeah,
yeah,
you need to
whether
enjoy it.
exactly,
Yeah.
exactly. Whether that could be football, rugby, Gaelic football, hurling, hockey, as long as they enjoy it, that's the main thing.
And then, Denise, as you were growing up, sporting heroes, who were your sporting heroes? Who were your inspirations? And maybe you might have a few funny stories to tell us, even during your time as a sports commentator, maybe.
I do. I will start with, you know, my dad was a big influence on me, Paul,
Yes.
because my daddy, I grew up at Lisburn Rugby Club. My dad was a coach at Lisburn Rugby Club, so pretty much every weekend we were the messing kids. Those kids you see just messing about, throwing stuff about and running about in circles and doing knee slides on the floors in the rugby club. Yeah, we were those kids. But we met great friends there through rugby, and my dad is obviously absolutely a massive Ireland rugby fan, so it was a point that, you know, if Ireland played really badly, like particularly against England, it would be, oh, you couldn't talk to him for a while. But he loved Ulster, loves Ireland, all rugby, and that sort of, obviously then we would watch it on TV, we'd been out at the rugby club, so that's where I learned a lot about rugby and those players at that time, the likes of Willie Anderson and Willie John McBride and all those names. And then obviously going to school, I went to like Wallace, which has had a lot of really, really good rugby players go through Wallace, like Chris Henry and Jacob Stockdale, to name a couple. So Wallace, and or sorry, rugby has always been in schools, cup is a huge thing as well. So that's always been probably the sport that I was most sort of akin to. And then at university, obviously minority sport like basketball, like my husband's sport, volleyball, learned about that. Hockey, again, you know, I'm from Lisburn, so Lisna Garvey, one of the best hockey clubs in all of Ireland on my doorstep here. In terms of heroes, I said about tennis. Now, tennis, I was obsessed with watching Wimbledon all the time when I was growing up, and the sun could be splitting the trees outside, I would be inside watching Wimbledon. Didn't like John McEnroe, now that's controversial. I just didn't like that sort of shouting at the umpire and the angry play, not take nothing away from how talented he is. Didn't like him. Mum and I loved Bjorn Borg. We would have watched him. But I was pretty obsessed with the Australian tennis player Pat Cash, and he won Wimbledon in 1987. He was the one that, remember, ran into the crowd to see his wife and baby. But I only had one poster on my wall growing up, and that was Pat Cash. I was absolutely obsessed with him, and I did follow him one time. This sounds a bit mad. My sister and I were in London. We saw him walking down King's Road one day, and we started to follow him. I think he knew we were following him. So that's one story. But being in the line of work that I'm in, and having worked for BBC 17 years, I got a chance. They brought a thing across to the SSE Arena called Tennis Legends, and John McEnroe came across, and everybody wanted to talk to John McEnroe, but Pat Cash was there too. And I said to the producer at the time, and we're doing a show called Season Ticket on the BBC, and I said, "Oh my, I will give you every penny I have if you could send me down to that, and I could interview Pat Cash." So it was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing with PR people and setting this all up, but I was going to get to interview my hero, and so I went down to it, and I was so nervous all day because even when I remember walking into the room, kind of feeling my heart coming out of my chest, because this is somebody who I just idolize. And he was as nice and as lovely as I hoped he would be. So we did the interview, and I didn't say at the start, I have a poster on my wall of you, but I thought, let's get the interview out of the way. And he was very charming. We talked about everything, very open, very warm, and obviously very handsome as well. But I'm
Helps.
looking, and I thought, when am I going to say, well, am I going to be able to say, you know, you were my idol growing up? And I thought, you know what? What have I got to lose, Paul? What do you think? You can just go right away. And I did. I said, you know, I had a poster on my wall of you when you are absolutely my idol. And he goes, okay. And he just kind of nodded and smiled. And I thought, wait, am I going too far here? You know, he's sort of looking at me really strangely. And he says, well, you know, that's good to know. That's good to know. So we got a photo, and then he signed. I had like a he's big into Pilates, and I had this sort of like DVD of him doing Pilates, and that's the only thing I could, because I didn't have a book of his.
Yes.
So he was absolutely lovely, and I am so, so lucky. I have met people in my time at BBC. So I started BBC in 1996, mm-hmm. and I have met, you know, like Joey Dunlop. Oh my goodness, what a lovely man.
Yes.
I've really honored to have met Joey Dunlop, to have met Sir Alex Ferguson, Eddie Irvine, and George Best, you
wow.
know, and actually, I would be yes. good friends with Alex, Alex's ex-wife. I met her through, they'd lived over here in Port of Ogie for a
mm-hmm,
while,
mm-hmm.
and my friend groomed their dogs, and one night I got this call, would you like to come up and have dinner? Alex wants us up for dinner, and Alex had cooked a beautiful lasagna and some wine and everything, and then George was, now he wasn't that well at the time, but he came down, and he was lovely, yeah.
Brilliant. They're cracking stories. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I'll cash my half of a restraining order.
Isn't it good to meet your hero, or and there was as nice as you were hoping.
Yes. Exactly.
And
it's
that's
really
lovely.
Lovely. Yeah. It's right. really important that happens, I think. And that's mm-hmm. the sports stars, in my opinion, sports stars are a lot more sort of down to earth, I'd say, than maybe somebody who's like a celebrity or Hollywood actor. And even though the access might be tough to get in to talk to somebody like a Ronaldo or a,
mm-hmm.
I'm looking at a very high level now, or like a Schumacher at the time, but you know, they are generally really, that's why I love sport so much, because people who play sport or do sport, it's their passion, so they're so open and they love talking to you. I've never had that problem that nobody would talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's good. Well Denise, we're nearly finished. I've got one more question for you.
Okay.
And it is your dream job. Now, you may well be in your dream job, it sounds like you certainly are, but I have to ask it, as I ask of everybody who does Irby podcast, your dream job. If I give you £1 million, what would you do?
Oh, if you give me £1 million,
yeah.
I'd probably have to give it to the flipping government for tax. Save our tax bills. Is anybody else having that problem? Mm-hmm. My dream job is, you know, like I did dream about this, Paul, when I was, you know, 10 or 11, listening to Radio 1, going to the road shows, even the downtown road shows, seeing the Ronan Kellys and the Paul mm-hmm. Atchisons and John Daly's, and thinking, mm-hmm. I'd love to do that. I would love to be part of a radio station. And, you know, I never did, actually. It wasn't me that decided I would do TV. It was always radio for me. But when I went to BBC, and my mentor sadly passed away last year, a man called Terry Smith, and he was so good mm-hmm. to me. He gave me opportunities that I, you know, he treated me equally. He was absolutely lovely. And
mm-hmm.
He took me on, and he said, we're going to try on TV and radio. I knew nothing about TV. I learned from the best. I had Jackie Fullerton and Jim Neely, Stephen Watson, mm-hmm. you know, in that office. And particularly Jackie Fullerton would have given me a lot of tips about, you know, reading autocue and making things seem seamless and being prepared wherever you go. So I was really lucky. It wasn't me that went, I want to be on TV, and then that just came. But radio at the heart of it has always been my absolute love, my dream, and I'm doing it now. And listen, you know, I've worked for BBC Northern Ireland, I've worked for you know, off the back of that, I've worked rallying shows for some RTE, TG Cahir,
mm-hmm.
Sky. I've done things I never thought I would ever do, and like being a rally car on stage of Rally Ireland, mm-hmm. which was something else. That's on YouTube if you want to see it.
Okay.
And I've met some great people, and you know, I would say if this all ends for me tomorrow, Paul, you know, I've had 50 years, and I have at the age of 26 achieved an ultimate dream, and I'm very, very lucky. It's not a day that goes by that I don't really say that I am really, really grateful to have a chance to do a breakfast show on a station like U105 with over 200,000 listeners. I never take it for granted, but I also know that it could end tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, it does. If I had to go and do anything else, I have one more qualification I would need to do to be able to teach English to A level. And I sometimes fancy doing that. So that's unusual, isn't it?
That is unusual. But here, Denise, it's been absolutely lovely talking to you.
Lovely to talk to you too.
You're absolutely dead on, and thanks very much for taking part in our wee podcast. That's great.
No problem, Paul. Okay, bye bye, everybody.
All right, bye. Thank you.